Good morning. Good morning, everyone. We're going to get started with the Senate Committee on Judiciary, so we'll call it order. I have a number of bills for public hearing and possible work sessions, and then some work session bills. We also are expecting a number of representatives or members to be coming into hearings today, so I may need to actually break and recess on a particular public hearing to take their testimony, then we'll come back. So with the caveat there, let's go ahead and get started at the top of the list and open up a public hearing on House Bill 2036A.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, House Bill 2036A modifies the applicability of statutes prohibiting unlawful discrimination against persons with disabilities so that provisions governing employment practices are applicable to employers, removes the limitation to civil claim that precludes enforcement by the Bureau of Labor and Industries for claims of unlawful denial of leave to attend criminal proceeding and unlawful use of genetic information, removes citation to civil penalties available outside the statutory scheme for claims of unfair housing, permits some uses of credit history for certain public safety officer applicants, declares an emergency effective on passage.
All right, so I'm going to recess House Bill 2036A, public hearing, open up a public hearing on House Bill 3166A.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3166A, forgive the delay, I may not have
statute of limitations.
Establishes a statutory limit of 6 years after the date of a decision for a person to file a request with the Land Use Board of Appeals for review of a land use decision or a limited land use decision.
All right. I got Representative Freeman. Tim, why don't you come on up, and let's see who else we have on this, because I understand this is, let's say, a work in progress still. So, Dave, I see you're here, and is Ed next to you? Why don't y'all all three come up? Tim, we'll let you start off. And if you need to leave, you can take off or you can stay around. My understanding is that they're going to do a little bit more work before we kind of move into work session.
Great. Thank you, Chair Przanski. For the record, my name is Tim Freeman, State Representative for House District 2. And today I bring a bill that I was amazed that we needed. This whole problem come out of a situation that's happening in my district around a gentleman that bought a piece of property that a land use decision had been made on. He was active military and out defending our country. After a period of time, came back and went to build his house and found that his neighbors didn't like that, and they filed an appeal on a decision that had been made many years before. I could not believe there wasn't a statute of limitations on land use decisions like this. We have brought a bill up that actually had 10 years, which was sort of the standard statute of limitations on civil things, and then working with Chair Przanski and others, have brought it down to a 6 year, which seems like an incredible long amount of time for people to wonder if their land use decision is final or not, but in this particular case would be more than sufficient, and I think would give a lot of certainty to the few cases around the state that this could come up and cause people issues. So I let the experts talk on it, but I very much appreciate the opportunity to have the bill heard and would love an opportunity to get it passed.
All right. Jim, do you need to go on?
I'm okay for a few minutes.
Okay. Dave, you want to go next?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, Dave Honeycutt, Oregonians in Action, speaking in support of 3166A. As the chair noted, this bill is a little bit of a work in progress. We looked at the bill when it was scheduled for a public hearing again and realized that there were a couple of language changes that we're desiring to make, and so we're working with folks in the building that are interested in those changes as well to try and reach an agreement on the language and bring back another set of amendments for the committee's consideration. As Representative Freeman noted, this is a good bill. It establishes essentially a statute of ultimate repose for land use, for appeals of local land use decisions. We have a true expert with us today on this bill, Ed Sullivan. Ed's been practicing law for 42 years. This is a case that he's familiar with, and so I'll turn it over to Ed and let Ed go ahead and fill in the details of the bill.
All right. Thank you. Ed, if you'll give us your testimony. We do have your written testimony,
right.
So if you can summarize.
Just briefly, I represent the
Bose. I need your name first.
Oh, sorry. Ed Sullivan, Portland. I represent the Bose who bought the property from somebody else. And under the 1993 legislation that was passed, the only person who could claim this particular lot of record was the original owner. So if Luba is correct in saying that you can bring this case 16 years later, then they are out of being able to build on their property. So what I've tried to do here is to put a statute of limitations in. I did propose the 10 years, and that was what generally is applicable. House saw fit to make it 6 years. There is an issue of applicability of when this bill should become effective. We proposed an emergency clause. We've also proposed that it deals with cases that are still alive. The unintended consequence is there anything else out there that it might affect? We're working with 1,000 Friends to deal with that issue. We hope to have some amendments back to you, and in my testimony you can see the other statutes of limitations that are available, and I'm happy to answer questions.
All right, thank you. Senator Dingfelder.
Thank you, Ed, it's good to see you. I have a question about, do you know why the House changed it from 10 to 6? I mean, I trust because of the amount of time
you've
spent working on municipal land use law, I certainly trust your judgment. So
it doesn't matter to us because either way would help, but I think the other folks up here might be able to tell you.
Chair Prezansky, Senator Dingfelder, there was quite a bit of desire on the House Judiciary Committee to actually move it to 3 years, and then what I thought would be appropriate is for at least the chair of this committee to have a discussion with those that were wanting to change it and make amendments, and through that discussion process and that consensus, the six-year number was picked. And the idea is that there's just simply, I mean, some land use decisions, appeals expire after a very short period of time. You know, the land use experts can speak to that, but some of them are very short, 90 days, 180 days, that type of
stuff.
21 days. The 10-year originally was just to match civil statute stuff. It really had nothing to do with the land use, from my understanding, really very little to do with land use stuff rather than just to match civil statute limitation, ultimate repose type things. So the 10-year wasn't part of any matching any type of a current land use. It just seemed that Oregonians should have some certainty in the land use decisions made by governments on behalf of their land. So the time period is not as crucial as the idea of having a time period of some kind.
All right, any other questions? Senator Winston, you have that pondering look. Okay. So I was thinking someone's going to ask about latches, but we won't go there either. All right. Thank you all very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone? Luba says latches doesn't apply.
Oh, okay. Anyone else wants to testify on 3166A? Yeah, we're going to get a real estate CLE out of this before it's said and done. All right. No one else is coming forward. We're closing the public hearing on House Bill 3166A. We're going to go back to the one that we opened previously, so I will reopen the public hearing on House Bill 2036A, and I have Kate Newhall scheduled to testify. Kate, come on up. Is there anyone else who will want to testify on House Bill 2036A?
Thank you, Chair Prezansky. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kate Newhall with the Bureau of Labor and Industries. House Bill 2036A is the Bureau's technical cleanup bill for our civil rights enforcement statutes. I wish I could explain it as succinctly and quickly as Council could. Hopefully I can do it nearly as quickly. This bill contains five technical cleanups that are completely unrelated, but essentially housekeeping in our civil rights statutes. So the first cleanup is in sections 1 and 2 of the bill, which are unlawful discrimination against persons with disabilities. There is one weird component of this in ORS 659A106 that provides that 659A103 to 145 only apply to employers of 6 or more persons and do not apply to the National Guard. The problem is that whole section and series deal with matters that are not all entirely related to employment, and instead some of them deal with discrimination related to real property transactions, state government services, transient lodging, and public accommodations. So the solution to this one is just to amend 659A106 so that it only applies to the employment-related disability statutes, which are 659A 112 to 139. The second fix is provisions for protected leave for employees to attend a criminal proceeding. This provision includes a private right of action, but does not also explicitly allow for BOLI enforcement, which is inconsistent with all of the other protections in 659A that allow for both BOLI enforcement and a private right of action. So the solution in this one is simply deleting 659A.1942, and you'll find that one in Section 3 of the bill. The next provision is in Section 4 related to genetic testing, which is currently enforceable by BOLI and a private right of action. But 659A.303 unnecessarily references the civil remedies found in 659A.885. And the reason that this is just sort of a housekeeping and cleanup is to keep it consistent with all of the other protections in 659A. It doesn't need to reference the civil remedies in 885. Simply by being an unlawful employment practice, it triggers both the civil penalty remedies and BOLI enforcement. The next provision is in Section 5 of the bill, related to our civil penalty authority. As you know, BOLI has our own administrative law process and hearings unit, and those penalties are spelled out in 659A855. However, there is a conflicting statute that in the Office of Administrative Hearings that provide. Sorry, I'm going to back up and just start over on that one. This one's a mouthful. So 659A855, which is our administrative law process and our civil penalties all spelled out, sub 3 of that provides that the civil penalties will be opposed in a manner consistent with 183.745, which is the Office of Administrative Hearings. That directly conflicts with their statutes that say that those penalties do not apply to penalties imposed under 659A. So the solution to this one is deleting the unnecessary subsection 3 of 659A.855. That one's a mouthful. The last piece is a lot simpler. When the legislature passed in 2010 provisions to prohibit the use of credit histories for employment purposes, the clear intent on one of the exemptions was to provide an exemption for public safety officers. The language, however, that was enacted didn't explicitly apply to applicant public safety officers, only to current and existing public safety officers. There was a clear record of that. It was certainly the way the bill was talked about in 2010. So the solution here is just to amend Section 2, Chapter 2 of Oregon laws to include applicant public safety officers. And that's found in Section 6. And after that mouthful, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
All right. Any questions for Kate? Not seeing any. Thank you very much. And again, I'm going to ask, is anyone else who wants to give testimony today on House Bill 2036A? Not seeing. We'll go ahead and close the public hearing. We're going to go ahead and open up the work session on House Bill 2036A.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2036A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
All right. Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2036A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And we're going to show Senator Bonamici as being excused.
I'll be happy to carry the bill if you want.
Right. I mean, it's in the
Mr.
SMS.
Chair,
go ahead.
And members of the committee, I was just inquiring whether I should make a record verbally that the documents are before the members of the committee, that there's no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact.
Right. Yeah. All right. And Senator Dinkfelder, if you will be the carrier, we'll go ahead and do that. I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing, or excuse me, the work session on House Bill 2036. We're waiting for another representative to come forward, so we're going to drop down and do House Bill 2681. So we'll open up that public hearing.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, House Bill 2681 prohibits corporation or cooperative from denying previously granted indemnification or payments to a director for expenses incurred in a proceeding, allows the corporation or cooperative to deny the previously granted indemnification or payments if, at the time of the act that gave rise to the proceeding, the articles, bylaws, or a resolution authorized such a denial after the occurrence of such an act, declares an emergency is effective on passage, is responsive to a case in Delaware, which is Representative Juan put it as sort of the gold standard in corporate law, so Oregon sort of paid attention. The potential for this happening in Oregon is it's possible, and the bill comes from the business law section of the Oregon State Bar.
All right. Thank you. Chris, I see that you're here. Let me just see if there's anyone else who's going to want to give testimony today on House Bill 2681. Go ahead.
Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee, my name is Chris Hall. I'm here to testify for the business law section of the Oregon State Bar. House Bill 2681 just makes a modest supplement to the current indemnification provisions for directors and officers. Basically, it can be very crippling to have to handle the expense of litigation if a director gets sued in performance of their duties. And so directors go in and they demand that they're covered through indemnification advancement expenses when they sign on to become a director. And companies wanting to attract quality directors readily give it in just every case. Unfortunately, there is a case in Delaware that came out, and we do, you know, a lot of states like Oregon do look to Delaware just as guidance, although they may make a different decision, but came out and said that a company can take away those rights and indemnification advancement expenses even after the act that gave rise to a right, rise to that triggered the indemnification happened. So basically, director signs on, thinks they have indemnification provisions that are in the articles and bylaws, some event occurs, and then the company says that we change your mind, you don't have indemnification expenses anymore, we're going to take it all away. So House Bill 2681 basically just fixes that and says that if there's an act that gave rise to the indemnification that is in their articles or bylaws, those can't be taken away from them unless the articles and bylaws specifically said they can be taken away. And it really fixes, because I think people would be very surprised at this result. I think no one would expect that, you know, you have these rights and then they can just be removed later. So it just kind of fixes that piece.
All right, great. Any questions for Chris? All right, thank you very much for coming forward. I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 2681. And if we're ready, we'll go ahead and open up a work session on House Bill 2681.
Chair, I move House Bill 2681 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
All right, Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2681 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And Senator Cruz, will you carry this one?
Sure.
Senator Cruz will be our carrier on 2681. And with that, we'll go ahead and close the work session on House Bill 2681. And we're going to go ahead and open up our public hearing on House Bill 2367A.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, 2367A allows counties with populations not more than 400,000 to offer or to contract for law library services or operation of law library using law library fees, requires a state court administrator to survey the same, and report to the Legislative Assembly every 2 years. Briefly, law libraries are traditionally located in courthouses. In 1981, when the responsibility for courthouse administration changed from counties to the state judicial branch, law libraries continued as county facilities staffed by county personnel or for large counties contracted out. Their operations are funded by a percentage of court filing fees paid by litigants. A report was commissioned using federal grant money by the Oregon Council of County Law Libraries, and it published a report in 2010. Which found broad inconsistencies in funding levels, service provision, staffing from county to county, and it generally recommended authorizing counties to enter into agreements to permit more effective access to legal materials. Current law allows the larger counties with populations exceeding 400,000, that's Multnomah and Washington, as I understand it, to contract with law library associations or corporations that maintain law libraries for use by certain persons, members of the bar. And some smaller counties have arrangements with other organizations, such as nearby universities or public libraries, to maintain a law library. This bill provides authority for these alternative arrangements and includes the provision of law library services, if not the operation of a law library.
All right, thank you. Representative Nathanson's here. We'll let you start off. I have three other people that appear to want to give testimony, Alex Kyler, Nan Heim, and Paul Snyder. Are there anyone else besides those three that will want to give testimony today? Nancy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee. I'm Nancy Nathanson, representative from House District 13. Committee Council has done a great job of summarizing the situation in a previous report and what the nature of this bill is for. My local government came to me with a situation that it turned out it would take the legislature to solve. To be more cost efficient, they wanted to contract with a nearby university library to provide law library services instead of doing it themselves, but they felt that the statute did not allow that. The state does allow collection of fees to go specifically to law libraries, but the immediate question was this: could a county satisfy its obligation to provide law library services through some other arrangement, or were they to interpret the statute as the words were, or as the words implied, that they had to provide a law library, which of course most people envision a physical structure. That is what it seemed to be, that they were required to provide a law library. Counties are under increasing financial stress. Fortunately, there are at least two ways of helping them resolve the problem that they can use: technology and intergovernmental agreements. With this proposal, we're recognizing that the world has changed. Since the statutes were written decades ago, we no longer have to record things only on paper. Information is recorded through other kinds of media. We can communicate through telephone and through internet, web-based technologies. The law libraries have just completed a very careful, thorough, forward-thinking analysis of how to deliver services, and new technologies offer additional options. This bill has two main components. First, the statute refers right now to a law library. We would change that to library services to broaden it. And second, it will make it clear that a county may arrange for services through other agreements, such as a contract with a law library organization or some other entity. So it's expanding the requirement from library to library services and enabling those other kinds of agreements to satisfy the requirement. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Cruz.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, just for clarification, so with this change, a county could have computer terminals and meet the requirement.
Mr. Chair and Senator, yes, I think so. If they were providing the services that would then satisfy the needs of judges, judicial staff, attorneys, the parties involved in cases, the public perhaps. But as was mentioned in the committee council's initial report describing the situation, from one county to another, the kinds of services provided vary widely. Sometimes there is staff present, sometimes there is not, sometimes there's access to some kinds of materials and not others. This could be seen as a way to even allow broader service, but through a more efficient means.
Any other questions? Senator Wissett.
Thank you, Chair Brzezinski. Representative Nathanson, on page 2 of the engrossed bill, starting on line 5, it talks about in counties containing not more than 400,000 inhabitants, which was all the counties except for Washington and Multnomah. And it says that essentially that the counties cannot use the monies acquired under from the CFAA money for any purpose other than a law library. Does that also extend currently to Multnomah and Washington counties?
Mr. Chair and Senator Wissett, I'm going to have to defer to the experts who understand how to interpret this statute.
Okay.
Senator Wissett, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it's my understanding that, yes, that applies to all counties, including the larger counties. Okay. Use of the funds, the purpose of the funds.
Because there is some question as to the, you know, the CFAA money has grown considerably as the fines and fees have been increased to support the courts. And the 18%, I believe it is, that goes to the law libraries has grown with it. Perhaps some people think more than is necessary to support the law libraries. And there is some concern that the money isn't being, all the money is deposited into the general fund of the counties, and perhaps it all doesn't find its way back to the law libraries. And this would appear to this section of the law, and I want to make clear if that's is true, this appears to restrict the counties to using that money only for law libraries.
That's my understanding, Senator. That's it.
Right. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions or comments? Senator Dingfelder.
Yeah, I just want to follow up on what Senator Witsa pointed out, because I was reading through the fiscal statement and that did not necessarily reflect it. It's actually 28% is what the 28% civil filing fee assessment that will go into that account. And so I was just going to ask the representative if there was discussion about that funding and what would happen to that funding if, for instance, it's not going to cost as much as what was dedicated. And I was surprised this didn't go to the Ways and Means Committee, actually. So since you're on Ways and Means, I'm sure you probably have an answer for that.
Mr. Chair and Senator, this bill was only about allowing a more efficient and perhaps even better way of delivering library services. It might even provide members of the public and people involved in court activities access to additional library services they don't even have access to now. This bill was limited in discussing how to provide law library services, and we did not at all want to get into monkeying with funding streams, percentages, dedicated versus general fees. There was another committee that Senator Whitsett and I sat on, a joint interim committee on justice system revenue reform or restructuring, and that committee had some discussions about this kind of a topic. But ultimately, the funding mechanism was not changed. But this was limited strictly to providing how services would be delivered.
All right. So, my appreciation in the bill here is just gives, let's say, more latitude authorization as to services itself. If anything's going to happen on the nuts and bolts of the funding would be through Ways and Means, and they definitely have the mechanisms in the way of bills for review if they want to make any modifications. With that, Representative, thank you very much. I'll call up our next three witnesses, Alex Kyler, Nan Heim, and Paul Snyder. Okay, who wants to volunteer?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Nan Heim, representing the Oregon Library Association, and here today in support of House Bill 2367. Our members strongly support the purpose of county law libraries, which is to provide legal information to litigants, attorneys, judges, and other members of the public. We do recognize that counties need more flexibility in how to provide these services, and we support this bill as a step in that direction. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Chair Pruszynski, members of the committee, I'm Alex Kyler. I'm the Lane County Intergovernmental Relations Manager. Submitted a letter for the record that expresses the support from the Lane County Board of Commissioners for this measure. As Representative Nancy Nathanson indicated, it was at our request to seek some clarification in the law. About a year ago, our county council came to me and suggested that they felt there was limitations on how we could collaborate with other organizations to provide law library services, and this bill attempts to get rid of this population threshold and put all counties on the same footing with regards to the provision of services. With respect to the question that Senator Whitsitt raised, the statutes do refer to chapter to 21.350, which is where the fees are, and in that statute they are combined such that all counties do have to maintain the money just for the use of law libraries. For instance, in Lane County, we have a special revenue fund that is just for law library services. So there's an accountability there within our budgeting process for where the money is held for the provision of the services. We feel that there is the need for us to be able to be flexible in how we provide these services. The representative indicated to you that we would like to explore a relationship with the University of Oregon that has a very substantial law library about a mile from our courthouse. The other thing she referenced was the study that was done for the Association of Law Libraries. And in that report, which wasn't finalized at the time we started to work on this, they talk about how there could be other models as an association of law libraries that could come together and provide services across counties. So I think there's a great deal of work that could be done. This bill sets the stage for that work. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Paul Snyder, representing Association of Oregon Counties, also appearing in support of House Bill 2367A. As you've already heard, there have been some ambiguities and disagreements about what the current law authorizes or doesn't authorize in terms of intergovernmental agreements between counties and other public entities. This bill would provide the necessary clarification and expand the authority to include the services that Representative Nathanson has described and that council has described as well.
All right, thank you. Any questions for anyone on the panel? Thank you all very much for coming forward. We'll go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 2367A and open up a work session on House Bill 2367A.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2367A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
All right, Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2367A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any discussion? Yes.
I just, in an overabundance of caution, just want to declare a potential conflict of interest in that I have a family member who is employed by the University of Oregon Library.
All right. Any other comments? Any objections? So ordered. And do I have a volunteer for 2367A?
I'm
a sponsor. Yeah. I didn't know, conflict and all that and all that.
It probably
give her a chance to express the conflict without having
caution.
To stand
it's
up.
Probably not necessary.
Yes, we'll be more efficient.
Erring on the side of caution.
All right. So Senator Bonamici will be our carrier for the 2367A. Close the work session on 2367A. And we will drop down to a public hearing on House Bill 2708A.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, 2708A protects consigners' artwork or consigners' portion of proceeds from sale of same from creditors' claims against consignee. Inserts a reference to art law provisions that are the subject of this measure into Oregon's Uniform Commercial Code, declares an emergency, and is effective on passage. This measure comes from the Oregon Law Commission in response to an opinion in a New York case that pointed out an error in Oregon law. The New York court, in deciding its case, reviewed existing law in other states, including Oregon's, and discovered the error. As currently written, it's my understanding, Oregon's law protects an artist's work not only from a gallery's creditors as intended, but from the artist's creditors as well. This bill corrects that slight overprotection to allow an artist's creditors to reach artwork to satisfy an artist's debt, but not a gallery's creditors to satisfy a gallery debt.
New York found that?
New York found it.
They're being artsy on us. All right, so we've got Chad and Wendy, whoever wants to start off.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Chad Krebs, and I'm a third-year law student at Willamette University College of Law and also a law clerk for the Oregon Law Commission. I'm here today on behalf of the Law Commission to testify in support of HB 2708. The bill is recommended by the Commission as a law improvement bill, and it comes to you following a 5802 passage in the House. HB 2708 is a simple cleanup bill of portions of Oregon's art consignment law, which is located in ORS 359205 through 359250, and was brought to our attention by Commissioner Don Vetri. as counsel said, as he was preparing for one of his courses, he discovered a judicial opinion out of New York which identified potential problems in Oregon law. On page 2, line 4 of the Ingross Bill, you'll find the issue that was highlighted in the New York opinion. And it's currently written, ORS 359210, shields an artist's work as well as the proceeds from its sale from claims of a creditor or of the consignee. And in this case, a consignee could be an art dealer, anything ranging from an art dealer down to even a coffee shop that's displaying art for sale. The intention of the statute is to protect the work or proceeds from the creditors of the consignee, not of the artist's own creditors, as it is currently written. In addition to these issues, to these issues of the creditors, the Commission also discovered inconsistent use of the term artist and consignor throughout the statute, and this bill does correct those issues, replacing the word artist with the term consignor, which includes anyone who creates artwork as well as those who simply own artwork or might be trying to sell it. And furthermore, the bill corrects an issue found in 359.220 sub 2, which addresses the rights of an artist to be credited as the artist of a work when it's on display. This particular portion is preempted by federal law. All issues dealing with the rights of under copyright law are dictated by federal copyright law. Overall, this bill clarifies the law, and it also offers the proper protection for consignors.
Wendy?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Wendy Johnson, Deputy Director and General Counsel. I'm just here to answer any questions and just would ask your support of this cleanup bill.
All right, thank you. Any questions or comments? Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just trying to find a definition of fine art, because this changes from the artist's own creation to fine art. And the reason I'm asking is, for example, there is in my district the Oregon College of Art and craft to them has a different meaning necessarily from fine art. So is this intended to only protect fine art? And if so, what does that mean? Does it not protect the craft?
I have given you all a report about the bill, and on page 4 of that report you'll see a footnote that defines fine art. It's located currently in 359.200 in the definition section for our consignment. And the purpose of changing to the word fine art is that it actually had a definition in the statute of something that lawyers or practitioners could look to find the meaning versus simply a piece of art or an artist's work, which wasn't defined at all in the statute.
Includes a craft. Got it. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for the clarification. Any other questions? All right. Thank you all very much. Is there anyone else who wants to give testimony today on 2708A?
No.
Not seeing anyone, we'll go ahead and close the public hearing on 2708A. Open a work session up on House Bill 2708A.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2708A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
All right. Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2708A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any questions? Any objections? So ordered. The chair, being urbane, will carry this bill. All right, we'll
close.
That
was good, because since I'm married to an artist,
I'm not
have
sure.
To declare.
Well, besides, I'm on the commission. I figured this is another way to do it.
But fine art and Texas boy, I'm
right. There we go. All right, so we're going to go ahead and close the work session on 2708A, and we're now going to go ahead and open up our public hearing on House Bill 3125A.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3125A requires each application for issuance of a license tag or permit to hunt with firearms to include a statement that the applicant attests to not having been convicted or found guilty but for insanity of a felony. Current law prohibits an individual from possessing a firearm if they've been convicted or found guilty but for insanity of a felony, and this bill would require them to make an attestation when applying for a hunting license tag or permit.
All right. Brad Witt, Representative, why don't you come up? I have one other person, John Huddle. Mr. Huddle, if you're here, why don't you go ahead and come on up, too? And is there anyone else who will want to give testimony on 3125A? When you're ready, Brad.
Muster Bean, Chairman.
I should have the bow tie today. I'll have it for the floor.
Members of the committee, Brad Witt, State Representative, House District 31. Here this morning in front of you in support of House Bill 3125A. This is a bill that addresses a loophole in the current state law, whereby felons who may not possess firearms are free to purchase hunting licenses or tags in the state of Oregon. If these licenses or tags are used, and presumably that's expressly why they're being purchased, this creates obviously serious problems. Either we have a felon who is in possession of a firearm attempting to fill that tag, or we have someone else who is using it who is not the person who the tag or license was issued to. Further, every felon who obtains a lottery drawn tag presently denies the opportunity to an otherwise law-abiding hunter the opportunity to purchase that tag and presumably go hunting. House Bill 3125A addresses these peculiar circumstances by requiring folks, when they purchase their hunting licenses and tags, when they sign their signature, there will be on the license and tag a statement that attests that the individual has not been, quote, convicted of a felony under the law of the state or any other state, or found guilty except for insanity under the law of the state or any other state. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I would strongly urge your affirmative vote on this bill and helping to close a loophole that's creating problems among the hunting community. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. Any questions from Representative Witt, not knowing what his schedule is? Okay. Senator Dingfelder.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative. I this may seem an odd question, but what about bow hunting?
Mr. Chairman.
That occurred to me because I don't know if this would, they would get a tag, yes. Obviously. To go well.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dingfelder, the bow hunting community is was intentionally left out of coverage of this bill. So a felon could choose to go bow hunting if he or she so desired.
Any other questions or clarifications? Senator Whitsett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Witt, isn't it already illegal for a felon to carry a firearm?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Whitsett, yes, that's exactly the issue here. It's illegal to do so. Why would we potentially incent that kind of illegal activity by selling a license or a tag to someone who's not supposed to have that firearm in the first place? Thank you.
All right. Any other questions for the representative? All right. John?
Yes, John Huddle from Lapine, Oregon. I'm here to support the concept of the bill, but I believe as written it is creates conflict of laws. We have provisions under the law where felons can petition to have their firearm privileges restored. That creates a problem. At the other hand, it doesn't go far enough because there are provisions under federal law where people have are not able to possess firearms. For instance, if someone has a dishonorable discharge from the military, if they've renounced their citizenship, if they're under a court order for stalking and harassment, there's several provisions in there. I've listed those. I sent to the chair a proposed amendment that would not create a conflict of laws, but would get at the intent of this bill, which is to prevent people who are prohibited from owning a firearm from asking or purchasing a license to hunt with a firearm. And I believe it would give local law enforcement some more tools to prosecute those people, such as illegal aliens that are out there with a hunting license, but they're actually out there perhaps protecting their marijuana patch for the cartels. So
that's all right.
Scenario.
Any questions for Mr. Huddle? All right, thank you very much for coming forward. Anyone else who wants to give testimony today on 3125A? All right, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on 3125A, and I'm going to speak with Representative Witt just regarding what anything we may need to do in addition to this on this bill, and we will reschedule it at some point for work session. All right, with that, we are now going into our work sessions. I just want to make sure we got everything squared. Mm-hmm. This. And we've had two bills that we've already voted out, and I know Senator Bonamici would like to actually be on record instead of just being excused on those two bills. So I think let's go ahead and clean those up first if we could.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move the rules be suspended to allow Senator Bonamici to vote on House Bill 2036A and House Bill 2681.
All right, Senator Cruz moves that we suspend the rules for the purposes of allowing Senator Bonamici to cast a vote on House Bill 2036A as well as House Bill 2681. Any objection? So ordered. Senator Bonamici, how do you vote on House Bill 2036A?
Aye.
And how do you vote on House Bill 2681?
Aye.
And with that, we'll go ahead and return to our other work sessions. And we'll start with the work session on House Bill 2677.
Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2677 was previously heard last week on the 5th. It has no revenue impact, no fiscal impact. It's the measure that allows an agent to sign an assignment of judgment on behalf of a judgment creditor. We heard from Mr. Marquis that day. Agents can do everything procedurally to obtain the judgment, but then they can't sign it off for collections.
All right.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2677 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
All right, Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2677 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Wissett, will you be our carry on this one?
Sure.
All right, the next one, I did not have time to give word to the proponents on the bill that I need to have this held. I know that they may have some documentation they want to provide to us, so I'm going to go in for the purpose of getting that documentation and open a work session on House Bill 2678. And Matt, thank you for coming forward.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 2678 was previously heard on the 5th. There's no revenue impact, and there's minimal fiscal as to the original bill and as to Dash 1 amendments, which we've received, which removes the emergency clause. It increases the bad check fee from $25 to $35, and the original bill declared an emergency to make it effective on passage.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Matt Marquis representing the Oregon Collectors Association. I'll be very brief. I just want to walk through what we're handing out. It's just a brief memo with an attachment that shows what the dishonored check fees are for retailers when they collect a check and turn that into a bank or a credit union, and it turns up to be insufficient funds. The retailer then is charged a fee from the bank, and you can see that fee ranges from $10 to $34. So we just wanted to, there are a lot of costs that go into collecting a dishonored check. One of them is completely out of our control, which is the check or the fee charged to us from the bank or credit union, which oftentimes can be over $25. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
All right, thank you. I don't think there are going to be any questions at this point. Is there?
Just want to clarify. This is the fee map that creditor has to pay to the financial institution.
Correct. If I'm a JCPenney's, for instance, I collect 100 checks, I deposit them one evening, one of them bounces as insufficient funds, the bank then charges JCPenney's, if it's Chase Bank, $34.
All right. Is there anyone else who wants to give any other, testimony or insight on House Bill 2678 at this time? Not seeing one, we'll go ahead and close that work session. We'll open up our next work session on 2682.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, House Bill 2682 was heard last week on the 5th. There's no revenue impact, a minimal fiscal impact. This is a measure that increases the amount of wages in state statutes that are exempt from garnishment to match the amount that is protected under federal law.
All right. Thank you.
I had double stuff on seven. I'm sorry, 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 I had double stu
682, and with that, we'll go ahead and close that work session, open up a work session on House Bill 2683A.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2683A was also heard on the 5th. It has no revenue impact and no fiscal impact. This is the measure that permits courts to disclose confidential information about protected persons in a more practical way, allowing those considering representation, for example, to look at documents that they couldn't previously.
All right.
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 2683A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2683A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And Senator Dingfelder, why don't you be the carry on this
one? Sure, I'd be happy to.
Okay. And with that, we'll go ahead and close the work session on 2683A, open up a work session on House Bill 2925A.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, 2925A, also heard on the 5th. No revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact. This is the one that requires issuance of a restraining order while a defendant is in custody rather than only upon release.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2925A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2925A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Bonamici, will you be our carrier? Senator Przanski will carry this 2925A, and we'll close the work session on 2925A, open up a work session on House Bill 3151A.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3151
there is no.
Adds drug treatment programs that support drug treatment to the list of allowable uses of forfeited proceeds. Currently, forfeited proceeds in drug cases are only permitted to be used for enforcement and education purposes.
All right.
Figure out where the A is and there isn't one. See that?
No, there's not.
Okay. Good. Because I would have been missing documents if there was.
Yeah.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3151 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 3151 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And
I'd be happy to carry.
Senator Wissett, that'd be great. We'll be our carrier on 3151A. We will close the work session on House Bill 3151A. And I believe that takes care of everything. Christy, is there anything we need to take care of? So today being Thursday, we're not on the floor tomorrow. That means we're back here on Monday, and I believe we will be starting at 8:30. So with that, we're adjourned. Thanks, everyone. Have a good weekend.